The love of money is the root of all evil. Yet in this world, we cannot function without money. What's a Christian to do? If we recognize God's laws of stewardship, we can be freed from the downside of having money. When we're no longer owners, but rather caretakers of financial resources, the whole picture changes. And this picture can be clearly seen in Acts chapter 4. Stay with us. From Chicago's Moody Church, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Erwin Lutzer is teaching us that when God is first, He owns our money. Join us in Acts chapter 4, where God's laws of stewardship are made clear. As God says to us,
I want you to recognize my sovereignty over all that you have. And the early church claimed nothing as belonging to themselves. They understood the law of rightful ownership. Now, notice number two, law number two, the law of joyful generosity. Joyful generosity. Did they have to do this? Did Peter stand up and say, now I want all of you to sell everything that you have and I want you to bring it to us? Absolutely not. For one thing, that principle could not possibly be applied today. You couldn't have a business if you sold it all and gave it all away. And that's why what we have here in the book of Acts, this story is descriptive in the sense that it describes what happened, but it is not prescriptive in the sense that it says this is what the church should do throughout all the ages. And we know that, first of all, that it was voluntary because of the text itself. Next week, I'm going to speak about Ananias and Sapphira. I hope that you are here next week because it's a remarkable story. But you remember they lied about what they gave, and it says in chapter 5, verse 4, Peter is speaking to them and says, why did you do that? Didn't it belong to you before it was sold? And after it was sold, wasn't the money at your disposal? In other words, if you wanted to keep the money, keep the money. Because we're not demanding it. You didn't have to get deceptive about it. Of course, what God is saying is that it's voluntary. There's no law that comes down from heaven. In fact, the New Testament doesn't even teach tithing. It refers to it, but it doesn't teach it as a mandatory regulation. Tithing was something done in the Old Testament. It was something like a tax. But you get to the New Testament, and Paul says, I am holding you to a higher standard. I'm holding you to the standard of generosity because you love God. I want to have cheerful givers who realize that they are giving because they have been given to. And so it liberates you from this need, this duty, this overriding obligation to give. So I say to you today that if when you give stingily. I don't know if there's a word like that, but let's just say there is. If before you give, you take that nickel and you press it, because this is your contribution. Keep your nickels and your dollars. Do not give unless you can give with a heart of gratitude to Almighty God, who first of all gave to you and to me. All right? So if you come today with a bad attitude, don't give. You say, well, the offering plates have already been passed. Yeah, but I'm talking about next week, okay? Giving is for those who love God, who understand that the blessings of God have come from heaven, undeserved. Giving is for those who know that they are children of God and they delight to give because they've been so honored as heirs of God and joint heirs with Jesus Christ. There's a story that comes to us from the days of Alexander the Great. He was riding along and a beggar held out his hand. Now, normally kings ignored beggars. And Alexander the Great actually gave this beggar, to whom he owed nothing, some gold coins. And one of his assistants said to him, why didn't you just give him some copper coins? They would have met his need. And Alexander, if this story is true, to his everlasting credit said, copper coins may meet the need of this beggar, but copper coins are not appropriate for a king to give. It's not just because you're meeting the needs of other people, though you most assuredly are. It is because of the fact that we are children of the King. So we give generously, and we give, and we look for places to give, because we love to give, and God has overcome the jealousy and the greed of our hearts. You say, well, shouldn't we tithe? Yes, tithing is a wonderful idea. It's a good benchmark. My wife and I have discovered that we can go beyond the tithe more each year. And so, yes, it's a wonderful way to tithe is good, but it's not as if we do it under obligation. Now, let me say very candidly to you that if everyone who attended Moody Church, who is a member and an attender and believed that Moody Church was his or her home, if they were all to tithe, we would never have to emphasize reaching toward tomorrow. We would never have to raise funds for our mission program. We would never have to do that. We would have enough money to touch many hundreds of people more in this city and around the world if all that people did was to understand that tithing is a good benchmark in your giving. But let it be done with a heart of sincerity and a heart of joy. The principle, the law of joyful generosity. There's a third law, and that is the law of total participation. You'll notice what it says. I'm still in the middle of verse 32. Seems as if I can't get out of it. It says, no one claimed that his possessions was his own. If they were agreed, if they were unified under the Holy Spirit of one mind and one heart, they said, hey, you know, all of us understand that we have a part in this. Some people's part bigger than others, but there was a sense of saying we all want to be in on this business of giving. Total participation. The unity of believers. You know, when we think of our own challenges here at the church and reaching toward tomorrow, we want participation on the part of everyone, including our children, our young people. Everybody can give something. Why? Because we need to see that this is a community project. It is a project of the whole body and not just some of its members. Now, I need to speak to you very candidly and tell you that there are hundreds of people who attend Moody Church and consider it their church home who give absolutely nothing Sunday by Sunday. What do you think that reveals about their relationship with God? They have not grown in what the Apostle Paul says, this grace of giving. They have never seen that it is possible to actually give away some of that selfishness and to be able to participate in what God says turns out to be a harvest of righteousness. And so our hearts go out to them, not because we need the money, though God knows we do, but our hearts goes out to them because we think of what is it that they are missing in their spiritual growth? Where is it that their hearts have been so locked to God's Spirit? It is Jesus who said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. What has happened to the joy? And so there was this emphasis of complete participation. That's another law of stewardship. Let me give you another law, and that is the law of proper distribution. The law of proper distribution. Now notice, it says that they sold what they had. There was no needy person among them, for from time to time, those who owned lands or houses sold them, brought the money from the sales, and put it at the apostles' feet. And it was distributed to anyone as he had need. They said, our first project here in Jerusalem is to the poor. Good idea. We here at the Moody Church have a fellowship fund, and the fellowship committee investigates the various causes and needs that come to its attention, because the Bible places a great deal of emphasis on the poor and our need to help those who are indeed needy because of all kinds of circumstances. Now, and so what they did, though, is they took this money and they put it at the apostles' feet. What does that tell you? It tells you that they very much trusted these apostles to do what was right. They knew that the money was going to be dispensed with integrity. And could I say it is important in our giving that we give to a ministry that does have integrity? Once again this week, just for a few moments, I was watching a television evangelist. Now, this isn't true of all of them. There's something about me that if I'm surfing, I can't seem to get past these folks and tune in for just a moment. But as I was listening to him, I thought, is there anyone on planet Earth who actually cannot see through this man and his greed and his deceptions? I'm amazed at where some of God's people put their money. And indeed, it is important that we have a sense of integrity and knowing what we are giving the money for. And knowing that it's going to be properly taken care of. I hope I don't need to say this, but here at the Moody Church, integrity with our finance committee, where everything is accounted for, not just to one person, but a committee and then a larger executive committee, is actually fundamental to who we are, because we need to be able to say, God, these are not our funds to be just distributed according to our own whims or for our own benefits. These funds belong to you. They have been given by God's people. And because they are God's, what we do with that money is much more important than what we do with the money that we hold back, because this is God's. And so there was this commitment to proper distribution, the belief that my gifts and my commitment is going to go where it ought to go, and the responsibility that there is involved. And could I throw in a parenthesis here? When you're thinking of giving, if you give and you have a home church, and for most of you that, of course, is this one, you give first and foremost to the ministry where you are fed and blessed and where you are involved.
Well, yes, of course, you give first of all to the ministry in which you are blessed and involved, the ministry of your local church. I really do believe that that is our first obligation, our first level of responsibility. I know that there are some of my friends who say, well, I want to give everything that I have to missions. That's wonderful. But if there were not those who sponsored the local church, we wouldn't even have a church that would be able to send missionaries, nor a church to be able to encourage missionaries to go. The local church is like an anchor. And when it is strong, it can be strong overseas. It can be strong in the lives of our missionaries and in the lives of all those whom it sends. So that's your first obligation. And I hope that wherever you attend church, that you will be generous with your church. Now, I need to say this very quickly, that of course beyond that, we all give, don't we? Certainly my wife and I, we give to other missionaries, we give to other mission organizations beyond the local church, and we're thankful that we have the opportunity of doing that. We ourselves here at Running to Win, we have financial obligations, and many of you have been so faithful in remembering us, and we even need more of you to do so in the future. But the bottom line is, it's important for you and for me to submit our finances to God and direct them as He guides us and as He wills.
Thank you, Dr. Lutzer. Erwin Lutzer has wrapped up part two of He Owns Our Money, the fourth message in his series, When God Is First, taken from the book of Acts. Tomorrow we'll explore in detail the law of unexpected blessing. Be sure to join us. Running to Win comes to you from Chicago's Moody Church to help you understand God's roadmap for your race of life. All eight messages in this series can be yours on CD, cassette, or MP3. For full information, call toll-free at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Visit our website at runningtowin.org. And don't forget, Running to Win is supported by listeners like you. This is Dave McAllister. For more about how God really does own your money, join us tomorrow for our next Running to Win.